Imagine waking up one morning to find your faucets completely dry. Not just yours, everyone's. No warning, no timeline for restoration, just nothing. This nightmarish scenario forms the heart of Dry, where Southern California's water supply suddenly vanishes in what becomes known as the tap out. The crisis begins during teenager Alyssa Morrow's routine shopping trip to Costco, where she discovers empty water shelves and demonstrates remarkable adaptability by grabbing bags of ice instead. This early triumph is short-lived when a businessman attempts to commandeer their ice supply, foreshadowing how quickly social contracts dissolve when resources become scarce. The suburban landscape transforms with unsettling speed. Sprinklers fall silent, swimming pools become precious reservoirs, and friendly neighbors suddenly regard each other with suspicion. Meanwhile, Kelton McCracken's family, long dismissed as paranoid preppers, suddenly seem prophetic with their 35-gallon water tank, extensive food stores, and sophisticated filtration systems. By the crisis's third day, as military vehicles requisition water from public facilities and household taps run completely dry, the veneer of civilization wears dangerously thin. When desperate neighbor Roger Malecki confronts the McCrackens about water for his infant, the violent confrontation demonstrates how quickly survival instincts override social bonds. The rapid disintegration of society reveals how quickly civilization crumbles when water disappears. Activist Camille Cohen witnesses water trucks making selective deliveries to privileged areas, highlighting how disaster amplifies existing inequalities. Utility worker David Chen, wearing a bulletproof vest, is attacked by a desperate mob that strips his water truck like piranha stripping flesh. Survival expert Kelton explains 3 days to animal, the theory that humans are just 3 days of desperate thirst away from reverting to primitive states. The tap out has turned Southern California into an unwilling laboratory for this theory. Different survival strategies emerge. Northward exodus creating massive gridlock, impromptu communities with specialized roles, and predatory water zombies attacking anyone with resources. When Alyssa confronts teenagers attacking an elderly man, their leader, a blue-eyed boy with cracked lips and a biohazard tattoo, demonstrates his desperation by licking her spit off his fingers for hydration, showing how quickly dehydration reduces humans to animal instincts. As water becomes scarce, our protagonists join street-smart Jackie and manipulative Henry, whose family had been price-gouging bottled water. Their mission? Reach Kelton's family shelter in Angeles National Forest. Disaster strips away social facades. Alyssa shifts from academics and soccer to contemplating violence. Kelton transforms from mocked prepper to essential survivor. Each brings crucial skills: Kelton's tactics, Henry's manipulation, Jackie's street smarts, and Alyssa's medical training. Impossible moral choices emerge. Alyssa assaults an elderly woman for water, leaving her to face an approaching wildfire, then rushes to save her brother Garrett. When threatened, Kelton kills two predators with shocking efficiency. Just pop, pop, and it was done. Most remarkable is Jackie, initially the most hardened, who discovers her humanity when others lose theirs. Despite severe burns and thirst, she refuses water meant for Garrett. In this moment of restraint, she reflects, while everyone around me loses theirs humanity, I've somehow found mine. Our protagonists face an impossible choice between dehydration and immolation as they flee toward San Gabriel Reservoir. The relentless forest fire pursues them through smoke. From a hilltop, they spot the reservoir a quarter mile away, but raging fire blocks their path, ending at a 50-foot cliff. The physical environment mirrors their psychological state. Suffocating smoke represents dwindling hopes, while encircling flames reflect their mounting desperation. In this ultimate crisis, Alyssa makes the most horrific decision, preparing to shoot her brother rather than let him burn alive. With trembling fingers on the trigger, she embodies the question, what sacrifices are we willing to make for those we love? Salvation arrives unexpectedly when a water bomber drenches them. Despite orders to drop elsewhere, the pilot intervenes after spotting people in danger, having flown too low to jettison his humanity. His decision represents compassion over protocol, showing that even in darkness, humanity retains capacity for sacrifice and connection. 2 weeks after partial water restoration, survivors process their experiences in four ways: the oblivious, maintaining pre-crisis routines; those with PTSD, jumping at unexpected sounds; the fulfilled, who discovered inner strength; and the shadows, those moving silently, haunted by survival choices. School has resumed with a somber atmosphere. Empty chairs mark the 38 students and three teachers who died during the tapout, with many still missing. Former Queen Bee Hallie Hartling now walks the halls in oversized hoodies, eyes downcast, weighed down by secrets. Psychological scars vary widely. Alyssa showers compulsively, yet panics at draining water. Garrett obsessively checks faucets for reassurance. Kelton's family is falling apart, his parents divorcing, their fortress home for sale, his father having disposed of his guns after accidentally killing someone. Yet amid trauma, crisis-forged bonds provide strength. Once mere acquaintances, Alyssa and Kelton share an unbreakable connection. They describe their relationship as old friends who've known each other for 100 years. It's just that 95 of them happened in 1 week. Disneyland reopens just 2 weeks after the tapout ends, meticulously restored despite nearly 40% of employees not returning. Over 200,000 people died, America's highest non-war fatality count, yet crowds queue for hours, desperate to reclaim pre-crisis normalcy. This scene captures America's complicated relationship with disaster, our contradictory impulse to both memorialize and forget, to move forward without fully processing collective trauma. The Emerald Gates welcome visitors while morgues still process bodies and survivors attend therapy. The new normal blends restoration with permanent change. Water service has resumed, but with strict rationing. People have developed conservation habits, collecting shower water in buckets, treating every drop as precious. Relationships have transformed, some strengthened through shared ordeal, others irreparably damaged. Divorce rates spike alongside marriage proposals. As Alyssa and Kelton imagine checking in with each other at future milestones, graduations, weddings, children, we're left with a bittersweet recognition that humans can endure terrible things and still find hope, even as experiences fundamentally reshape their understanding of what matters. Dry presents a thought experiment about civilization's fragility. By removing just water, we witness how quickly social structures collapse and moral boundaries fade as survival instincts take over. The novel reveals ordinary people's transformation when basic needs are threatened. These questions extend beyond fiction. Cape Town's Day Zero, California's mega drought, and Colorado River Basin tensions show how resource scarcity triggers conflict. Our essential systems, clean water, food supplies, electricity, exist in a delicate web of interdependencies. Hope emerges through characters maintaining humanity despite dire circumstances. Charity helps strangers when self-preservation would be easier. The water bomber pilot chooses compassion over protocol. Jackie discovers altruism while others surrender to base instincts. As environmental challenges grow, Dry offers both warning and wisdom. While systems may fail, human ingenuity and compassion remain crucial for survival. The strongest communities weren't those with the most resources, but those who maintained social bonds and shared what they had.